This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Emmers, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. So this episode that we're going to talk about this week is probably really what I wanted to talk about last week. But in order to understand how we use ROI, or return on investment, to let us make better decisions for our business, we have to understand what return on investment is. And if you're sitting here right now thinking to yourself, well, hon, I don't know what ROI or return on investment stands for, then take a time out, go and listen to last week's episode first. Not that this won't make sense and not that these are the most advanced ideas, but yeah, these are probably meant to be listened to in that order. For the rest of you guys, for the dedicated listeners that say, hon, I would never miss a week of your episodes. How can we judge ROI to judge our advertising, to make better buying decisions, and everything else is what we're going to talk about this week. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Reminder, if you want your question answered on here live, just have a question for something I talked about, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to me about accounting and tax services for your repair shop? Text Parmelis at 301-307-5413. And last, but surely not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors. If you need to recruit and hire top talent for your team, give Promotive a call and let them help you out just like they have hundreds of other shops. Also, like I always tell you guys, it's easy to recommend them because all I hear from my shops is good things. Check them out. Great news. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. All right, so before we get into the return on investment, and more specifically how we use this return on investment in your actual decision, I do have a quick plug that I wanted to put in here. Some of you guys, you and I have talked. Some of you guys, you and I have spoken through email. The overtime question and the exemptions and how we can qualify as overtime, we are going to talk about that more. Like I told some of you via email or via the phone, even the government doesn't have the rules on this. Does this person qualify? Could I get in trouble if I call this overtime and it doesn't really qualify? And even some of these things of overtime in my state isn't the same overtime that they're talking about. We are going to do another episode about the tax law changes and specifically overtime on this. And I think that Jamie from CESCO is planning to come at the end of August. So the idea here is the government had 90 days to come out and give you and everyone else the rules on how this overtime is going to work. We could do an episode right now, but it's still a lot of guesses. And I've already given you one episode where it kind of goes over the rough overview and some missing pieces to it. And that's where we stand today. I'm not ignoring you guys. I know it's what you guys want to talk about, but I don't want to come on here and just, again, give generalities and give my opinion. The next time we talk about overtime, we're going to be giving real life examples. You can do this, you cannot do this, you should do this, you should not do that. Not to tease you guys, but it's on our radar, it's been scheduled, and depending on when you listen to this episode, it might be out right now, but probably out in 2 to 3 weeks when you're listening to this live. I had to give kind of a quick little shout out there. There's a couple other little ones that I probably want to update, but we really need to talk about this episode. And really, like I mentioned before on this, this episode on return on investment is really the nuts and bolts of how you guys use it. When we talked about return on investment last week, we really gave you the conceptual framework. And the conceptual framework is extremely, extremely important. Arguably, the idea behind, you know, the risk relationship of return on investment, the time relationship or the return on investment is probably the most important thing to understand. Because once you understand return on investment, you can apply it to a number of different things. And what we're actually going to talk about this week is in literal situations, how do I use ROI and how do I use it in my business to make better decisions, judge my vendors or judge my advertisers in this situation, buy a business, sometimes even sell a business on this, and then also look at this as far as paying down debt. What does all this have to do? What does all this have in common? Yeah, it's all things and all probably different financial indicators that you guys should be judging for your business. And if we talk about all this stuff, how's your advertiser doing? Should you buy that alignment rack? It's all decisions that you guys are making right now, but I'm going to challenge you to say, is this the same way that you make these decisions? Or is your more emotional? Whereas we're going to look at the number side of it. It's hard to say which one of these is the most important. I was going to say advertising is the most important one we're going to talk about this week, but I'm going to change that. It's obviously not the most important one we're going to talk about because it's probably one of the smaller ones, but it's the most important as in I don't see most of you guys judging your advertising this way. A lot of times when people come to me and they want me to judge their advertising or judge their advertising dollars, they go a couple of different ways. Hunt, what should a normal shop be spending on advertising? And we generally look at that as a percentage of sales. So I've heard indicators thrown out there. I'll give you the rules of thumb. What I have always been taught on this and what I've always seen is you should be spending probably 3-6% of your sales on the sales level of where you want to be. What does that mean? Let's say that you're trying to spend 6% of your sales. You're currently at $1 million. That would mean that you should be spending $60,000 on advertising, assuming you want to stay at $1 million. What people fail to kind of realize in there is, hey, these are the advertising dollars for that sales level. So if you're more or less in line at that current sales level on it, you shouldn't be expecting any addition. Oversimplification, I will tell you right now, 3-6% is a good rule of thumb to a certain extent, so location specific, show shop specific. But the idea to take in behind there is, yeah, if you're looking at this and you're saying, Hunt, I'm at $1 million and trying to go to 2 million and I'm spending 1-2% of my current sales, does that mean I'm probably not spending enough? Yeah, probably. If you are at $2 million and you want to be at $2 million and you're spending 10% of your sales on advertising, is it safe to say you're spending too much? Again, probably yes. Anything in between there, it is a very bad way to judge your advertising by looking at your relative cost compared to sales. You are trying to make a connection and you're trying to make a correlation that is just not there. Hunt, if you say that what I've always been taught and maybe the way that I've always ever, audited or, judge my advertising budget is from a percentage of sales standpoint, well, what the heck am I supposed to do? You said I shouldn't be emotional about this. So how do you judge your advertising in a non-emotional way? My answer to you, as you can probably imagine, is ROI, return on investment. Really, when you break it down, when I look at anything in a business, I say you should never judge something by its cost. You should judge something by its value. And return on investment is a more literal way to translate that. I don't really care what it's costing me. I care what it's giving me. Advertising and a lot of the things that we're going to talk about this week is supposed to be a two-way street. I give money to you, you give money by way of customers to me. As long as I keep on pushing money, and as long as you keep on pushing customers, we have a really good plan here. This is a two-way street that we hope is flowing more back towards us than away. If I'm giving them $1,000 and they're giving me back $750, I don't even have a return on my investment. I am not even making my money back. Now, if we were to look at this the same way and we say, I'm going to send you $1,000 a month and you're going to send me back $1,000 in sales or gross profit, are we really that happy? Yeah, we're getting our money back, but again, our return on investment is zero. When we look at this, when we look at our advertising dollars, instead of saying, hey, what is this as a percentage of sales? I'm actually going to go and I'm going to judge the advertisers, the advertising company on what they're doing. How much money am I sending you? And how much in new customer gross profit is that giving me? And I'm going to stop right there and I'm going to kind of explain of why I'm using gross profit dollars, not sales dollars. If we are using sales dollars, do we actually have sales that are going to pay our advertising bill or do we have an assumption or variable? Sales mean nothing. Gross profit dollars mean everything. So if they get me $3,000 in sales, it only ends up being $200 in gross profit. How much money do I have to pay my advertiser? I don't have $3,000. I only have $200 left. First and foremost, we judge them on the profit that they give us, not the overall sales. To some extent, you can't judge the advertisers if you have a pricing issue. But again, we need to make sure that we're measuring apples to apples here. I'm giving you gross profit dollars. So what I'm measuring coming back is gross profit dollars as well too. You're thinking to yourself, hon, I'm not using gross profit dollars, right? I'm using sales dollars. No. Sales dollars go to technicians, parts, advisors, sublet, tires. Gross profit dollars go to pay overhead. Again, a little bit of a sleight of hand there, a little bit of 6 1/2 dozen, but hopefully that makes sense. We need to get paid back in profit. Sales are not necessarily profit. If you want a good rule of thumb on there, assuming that you're averaging 50% gross profit, you need double the sales to pay back your advertising dollars. If I spend $2,000 a month on advertising and I get $4,000 in sales, that's going to translate to $2,000 in gross profit. My return on investment is zero. If I spend $2,000 and that gives me $3,000 a month in sales, it's only going to give me $1,500 in gross profit. Now I have a negative return on investment. So as you can see, this is pretty clear on how you can judge this. If I'm giving an advertiser $2,000 and they're giving me back, you know, $8,000 in sales or $4,000 in gross profit, I'm getting a 100% return on my money. And I gave you $2,000, I got back $4,000. I doubled my money. If they can do that on a consistent basis, month in, month out, then I don't even care what that is as a percentage of my sales. It's going to work out just fine. It's honestly going to probably look low, but this advertising is working so well that I know if I give them two, it's turned into four. So if I'm looking at that, and let's say that maybe I'm on the upper indicators of a percentage of my sales, and I looked at this and I said, I'm spending about 7% of my sales right now on advertising. That metric would tell you shouldn't be spending this much money on advertising. Whereas if you're measuring that from a return on investment standpoint, I'm getting 100% return on my money. I'm going to give the advertisers as much money as I can afford, as much production as my shop can handle until I stop getting that kind of return. If I can give them $4,000 to give back eight, I'm going to see if I can give them eight and get back 16. If you're getting that kind of return, you're going to keep on doing it until you start to see diminishing returns, and then you know you've hit your spot. The first one, why I said it's the most important, or maybe a bit of a overpromise on there, but it's absolutely a different way that you guys are looking at this stuff. The tricky part about this is it's probably the hardest one out of all these things that we're going to talk about to actually measure. The hardest part about this is how much are these advertisers really getting you? And that's not a knock on an advertising company, a marketing company, or anything like that. It's just really hard. If you have a billboard, is someone going to come in and say, the reason I came here is because of that billboard? Or they can say, I got your mailers, I heard you advertise on the radio, and then I saw your billboard, now I'm here. Tagging that sales to the individual person is obviously hard. And the big thing that I will say here is if you guys are not recording this stuff, if you guys are not asking your customers how they heard about you and putting that into a format that you can actually analyze, you can't do any of this stuff. If you have four or five different methods of advertising on it, and you're not asking your customer why they came in, you are not going to go back and judge your advertisers because you can look at where all the customers are coming from. You can judge the overall, you know, bundle of them. But you don't know if Yelp is working and the radio ads are just atrocious, or maybe that TV ad is printing all the money and everything else is just a waste of time. Don't look at this by the cost. Don't look at this by a percentage of sales. Look at the value. Look at the return on investment that you're getting on advertising. And if you're not getting it, you need to reset the guidelines on it or maybe find someone else. And if they are giving you those returns on it, the last thing that you want to do is say, man, I'm spending a ton of money with them. And flip that around and say, wow, this is probably one of my strongest relationships. What other vendor, what other business partner am I actually giving money to and they're creating money back for me? Next time you're looking at advertising, next time you're judging it, think to yourself, am I actually judging the numbers? Am I judging perceptions, variables, and maybe a whole lot of nothing? The advertising discussion and how you use return on investment is a very important one and the one I wanted to get out of here first, but it's probably not why you listen to this episode. Why you listen to this episode and what you're expecting to hear is probably what we're going to be talking about here in the next two. Buying a piece of equipment or even just buying a business in general. Shop owners, are you struggling to find and retain top-tier talent for your automotive shop? Introducing Promotive on the web at gopromotive.com. With over 40 years of combined industry and recruiting experience, we're the ultimate staffing solution. We go beyond traditional agencies. Our team provides dedicated recruiters and account managers advising on processes, compensation, and benefits. We focus on placing technicians and service advisors with shops that offer the best culture, training, and long-term growth opportunities. Trust our experience to match the right talent to your shop. We carefully select shops that value employee excellence and provide an environment for success. Our dedicated team leads the entire process, leveraging our industry knowledge and expertise. Partner with Promotive and experience their advantage to help you build a high-performing team that drives your shop's growth. Visit gopromotive.com today and let us help find and keep the best talent in the industry.
Let's look at what I like to use as my most classical example of using return on investment when buying equipment, and that is an alignment rack. Because again, this is a conversation that we end up having a lot with our clients because it's a large purchase and it might not be something that they've ever really had in the past. Generally, the conversation goes like this. Hunt, I'm looking at getting an alignment rack. You guys almost always finance this. And let's just say you're going to finance this over, at this rate, it probably had to be like 10 years, but the monthly lease is going to be $1,000 a month. So a client reaches out to me, Hunt, looking to get an alignment rack. How many alignment racks or how many alignments or at what rate do I need to sell to cover the cost? How many would I really need to sell for this to be profitable? And does this make sense to me? If you guys are looking at this, you are probably already doing a return on investment calculation, whether you know it or not. How much is this going to cost me? How many alignments do I need to sell at what rate to make back that monthly payment? So if you're looking at this from that perspective on it, whether you know it or not, you are measuring your return on investment, also known as your break-even point, but a break-even point is the same as a 0% ROI. I just want to make my money back. I just want to cover my cost. The way that we look at this for a client is you can do this one of two ways. You can break it down based on price or you can break it down based on amount. And I will kind of tell you which way I would go with this depending on where you stand. If you are looking at this and you are saying it's $1,000 a month, I'm going to charge $100 for an alignment because that is what the market dictates. I tried it before. The guy down the street does this. This is how much the market will hold. Whatever it is, if you have kind of a price constraint on it, then so be it. Go for it. And if anything, go on the lower side. If you think you might be able to get 120, do 110. And you always want to be conservative on this. Let's assume in really simple math, no, this is not a hunter equipment. Like I said, I don't know what this is, but it's $1,000 a month payment. If I sell an alignment for $100, I know that I need to sell 10 alignments to pay for itself. There's some profit. There's some tech costs in here. Just go with me for right now. If I look at this and I talk to my client on about this, I say our return on investment to get to zero or a break-even point is like 10 alignments. How do you now use the ROI to judge if you should get this or not? So if I go back to my client and say, yeah, you can pay for itself if you get 10 alignments. If you get 11, you're actually going to get 10% return on your money. If you get 12, it's 20%, et cetera. Should you do this? And based on what my client says back to me, they make the determination, not me. If I have a client that calls me up and says, we go through this entire thing and they say, Hunt, we're already subletting out 15 alignments a month right now. We already know it's a no-brainer. We know that just from the work that we're already farming out to someone else, that's going to turn into $1,500 in alignment sales for us. The monthly cost of this is $1,000, no-brainer. What if you're looking at this and you're saying, well, Hunt, I only have probably about 5 cars that I'm doing alignments a month. What you would have to do is you would have to look at this and say, hey, do I have the potential to start to upsell this? Do I have the potential to start canning this with other jobs since I have the ability to do an alignment rack? Or is my volume limited on this and the only way I can make this work is on price? And this is where you can come back and you have to kind of go both ways on this. Do I think I have the marketing potential? Do I think that I touch enough cars that would say yes to that? And for a situation where if you're trying to do, you know, 5 extra alignments a month, most of you guys can probably cover that. But as most of you guys probably know, with the cost of these new equipment, it's not like $1,000 a month for an alignment rack. It could be $3,000 or $4,000. And you could start to see a point where the amount of volume that you would have to come through at $100 an alignment is just never going to make sense. And that's when you would have to look at this and say, either this investment doesn't make sense because I measured the ROI and it's going to be zero or negative because I just cannot sell enough alignments at $100. Or you need to go back and you need to work it the other way. All right, I'm going to be able to sell 20 of these. I can probably get $150 for this. If I increase the price, can I actually artificially increase my return on investment that way? The big cautionary tale there is if you think that you can raise the prices 20, 30, 40%, and still have the same amount of close ratio, same expectations, then you're going to be sadly disappointed. Generally, when I'm doing these projections, I'm always going worst case scenario. And if I don't know what a number is going to be, I never kind of factor in phantom improvement. And I say worst case scenario, let's just say we keep everything constant. It's going to be the same as it is what now. What does this work out? Does this make sense? To kind of wrap it up on the alignment rack of, all right, there's going to be situations where you're going to look at this and say, Hunt, it's negative 50%. We're not buying an alignment rack. Or it's 100, 200, 300%. We're absolutely getting that alignment rack. What happens if it's the kind of a 0, 5%? What if it's a break even? What would that ROI tell you to do? Again, the ROI is telling you everything. This isn't going to help you. This isn't going to hurt you. Is there something else that makes you want to get this? The argument on the upside of this would be like, hey, right now it's going to cover this cost. We plan to grow. We plan to increase our volume. It's not hurting us. It could only help us in the future. The other side of this would be, maybe I have a smaller shop. This thing is never really going to drive a bunch of money on here, and it's going to take up an entire bay, which then gets you to another thing of, my return on investment isn't too bad, but maybe my opportunity cost is massive. It doesn't mean that every decision is going to be easy, but it gives you a lot better foundational knowledge to kind of take some of this emotion out of it. We did talk about this last week, but buying a business is probably the most used example of this, because this is the only way that shops are really sold. There are other businesses that are sold as a multiple of sales. There are other businesses that are sold of different metrics that have nothing to do with cash flow, return on investment, or profit. But in most situations, shops are valued on exclusively that and that alone. When you're looking at buying a business, you know, whether it's your first location or another location, really the question that you have to ask yourself is, how much money do I want to make and how long do I want to wait to make my money? Because depending on what your risk tolerance is or depending on what your goal is, it's going to dictate what kind of business that you want. I'll give an example of that. And I'll give you two different businesses that some person could still value for the same amount. We have two businesses, both worth $600,000. One of them makes around $200,000 of profit, and one of them makes $60,000 in profit in a year. The one that makes $200,000 of profit is going to give me a 33% return on my money. I'm going to make my money back 100% after 3 years. This is how most shops are sold. If you make 200 grand, your shop's probably worth 600 grand. Private equity, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but in most situations on it, you're getting a 3x multiple, maybe 4x multiple, and a buyer wants to see a 25 to 33% return on investment on their money. Now, that other example where that shop that they asked $600,000 for it, if I'm looking at that and I know that that business is only making $60,000 in profit, that gives me a 10% return on my investment. I put $600,000 in and then I'm going to get 60 grand back. It's going to take me around 10 years to make back my money. If I'm looking at that and I'm starting to compare my options on this, a 10% return on investment isn't that attractive to me. I am going to be in that shop a lot. Stock market averages around 10% for the last 50 years. What's more work? Logging into E-Trade, checking on some stocks, or maybe even talking to a financial advisor, or hiring, firing, running a shop, managing a shop, dealing with all the issues that go around it to hopefully get the same type of investment. It's just not very common, and this is why you see businesses or small businesses are just often not sold at a number this low. It's too much work, there's too much risk, and the return on investment is just not high enough. The trickier part about this is we don't generally see these deals where the return on investment is that long because the free market just won't let it happen. There's too many better deals out there for shops for someone to overpay that much, especially if we're looking at the classical kind of independent investor. The unfortunate thing is I sometimes do see these deals on family deals because there is no check and balance. A bank is not involved, and especially if mom and dad or dad and uncle or whoever is going to finance this stuff, I see some really long-term deals which end up not working out great for the business or the second in command. What I recommend everyone to do, whether this is an outside party or inside party, is run the return on investment for both parties. Make sure that it makes sense. If you are looking at this and you are trying to sell this to someone else and their return on investment for running a repair shop is going to be 10%, then you shouldn't be surprised that they're not that interested in the deal, and you shouldn't be either. So be reasonable about this. Do not try and shoulder your return on investment with the next generation. Be smart, because at the end of the day, the company doesn't win, the employees don't win, and the customers don't win if you cannot afford to make the payment, or if this person is just living to make the payment. And in a situation like this, the business is going to make enough money to pay this back over 10 years, but that guy just ran a business, worked really hard, and didn't make any return on his money. No one wants to do that. I'd mentioned this before, and before you get into our last one of paying down debt or using return investment to judge paying down debt, I have to mention private equity. I think we're actually going to do an episode next week about private equity, because the private equity valuations kind of go hand in hand with this return on investment conversation that we're having. there's a bit more to it, which is why I think that, you know, having a whole episode about some of these situations is important. But the private equity and how they're willing to pay you guys more money is pretty much that exact example that we just showed. How can a private equity company pay me $1.2 million on a business that makes $200,000 a year when I just had a fair market value and I was about to accept it for half at $600,000? What you're seeing is people making their own return on investment calculation. If I'm going to go in and buy that business and I'm going to run there and I'm going to be there every single day, yeah, I want a 33% return on my money. If I have layers of this, if I'm an 80 location conglomerate buying up people left and right on there, the person with the money is never actually stepping foot in that shop and never has to do anything. But if they're looking at it, they're looking at it from a strictly investment standpoint in private equity, they are now getting a 20% return on an investment. They don't care if it's a shop. They don't care if it's an HVAC company. They are using different numbers than we are. Is there upsides to it? Is there downsides to it? How can you use that to leverage with your business? Like I said, next week, we're going to talk about private equity and some of the little intricacies and some of the things that maybe we can learn from them and probably some things that we can probably choose to ignore as well too. To wrap this up, let's talk about paying down debt. The conversation generally starts this way on it. Hunt, business is good. Is it smart for me to pay down this debt? Should I pay down that debt? Where is it? First and foremost, I'm going to give you my opinion and where I kind of go away from Dave Ramsey. Follow me here. Everyone has their own risk tolerance. Everyone has their own debt tolerance on it. But you really see one of two things. You have the Dave Ramsey approach, which is all debt is bad debt. You should pay for things with cash, pay for things with the cash flow. And the other side of it is, hey, you're self-employed, you're an entrepreneur, you need to leverage yourself, you need to take risk and get debt. Really, I'm somewhere in the middle. If you can do this without taking any debt, my clients are able to retire the most happiest and, you know, with the most money are the ones that pay down their debt. Now, was it because they paid down their debt or they're just kind of savvy with their financials? Yeah, there's a toss up there. But at the end of the day, I would much rather have $100,000 in a savings account and owe a bank $100,000 than be debt-free and have no reserves. Cash is king. You need cash to pay the bills on it. It's great to be debt-free, but it's much worse to be cash-free. The whole idea on return on investment and where it works for debt is very simple. Your return on investment for paying down debt is whatever that interest rate is. You want an instant 24% return on your money? Pay down your credit card. That's probably on the low side of it. If I had to guess, nowadays, some credit cards are 35%. You carry a $30,000 balance for the entire year just paying the minimums. You pay them $10,000 in interest. You pay that debt off now, and essentially, you're making that same 33% as return on investment because the opportunity cost of what would have happened. If I don't pay down this debt, I'm going to be charged 33% interest. Since I did pay it down, I get to pocket that difference or end up not paying it. What if we're talking about mortgages, though, and specifically mortgages that were done not in the last couple of years, but last 5 years, but not as recent as 2 years, were a really, really cheap interest rates. You know, I had a client call me the other day that had a personal mortgage of 2.75%. And they say, Hunt, I don't like to be debt-free. I want to pay off my house. And I told them, absolutely not. No, I didn't say it that way. I said, if you really want to, if you want to do this from the emotional standpoint, if you just don't want to have a mortgage on it, then fine. I get it. I understand it. But from a financial standpoint, from a return on investment standpoint, it might be one of the dumber things that you've ever done. I was being a bit tongue-in-cheek there, and obviously the client didn't care about this, but I explained. If you want to look at this from a financial standpoint, it's not even a question. The numbers will say you absolutely do not do this in this time. So the reason why is this. If you invested this money at 10% and paid the note at 2.75%, you are still ahead 7% every single year. What that means is, let's say I have a $300,000 mortgage and I have a $300,000 invested in the market. $300,000 mortgage is going to cost me, what, around $10,000 in interest at 3%. That investment of the same 300 grand is now going to make me 30 grand of interest. The interest that I'm making on my investments outweighs the interest that I'm spending on my mortgage. If you look at that from the Dave Ramsey approach and say, you should have nothing, you should be debt-free and investment-free on there, I make zero money. But if I have the investment making me 10% and the mortgage only costs me 3%, just that interest rate arbitrage, it's going to save me, it's going to earn me around $20,000 a year. Not too bad at all. you can start to get to a point on this. Credit cards are obviously a no-brainer to pay those down. On the other side of this, personal mortgages are pretty cheap. Once you start to get in the 4, 5, 6, 7% range, you start to have some different questions. The big thing that I will say to you guys is, what is the ROI going to be with the money that you actually use versus what would it be the smartest use of that? So I'll give you a great example. I have someone that would look at this and say, man, I have this car note on here for 8%. But if I invest this in a market, it's going to get me at least 10%, maybe even more. If deep down, I know that this client is never actually going to invest in it, it's just going to leave it in as a checking account, making them no money, then I'm going to call them out and say, we know we're not going to get that arbitrage. You're not going to go invest it. And maybe what you're investing on just as easily could lose money. We still have this 8%. It probably makes sense to pay down the debt. Last one on here, I'm paying down debt. Kind of going back to the first one we talked about, a two-way street. I will pay down debt that's a two-way street much more aggressively than I will pay down one-time kind of, you know, debts. What I mean by that is this. If I want to get aggressive on paying a credit card down and I decide next month that, ooh, I kind of needed to keep that balance on there, it's a revolving credit line. You can always run that up, right? So I'm always aggressive on paying down credit cards. I'm always aggressive on paying down lines of credit because I could just easily bring that money back up as I can bring it down. Paying down mortgages is not the same. Yeah, to a certain extent, you can go and refinance it, not quickly. Make that decision and make it once. And be careful on leases. Most equipment leases, when you guys sign on the paperwork, you guys do not get a break on the interest, even if you decide to pay it off early. So again, are you getting an actual good return on investment? If someone was to look at paying off a lease early, it would never, ever get done because it doesn't make any financial sense. We are not saving any interest because the interest is already accrued, whether we give it to them now or later. We are just using our reserves that we could have got probably an easy 4% just to get this off the books. Again, if you're in those two schools of thoughts and you'd like to be debt-free on it, there's not many situations that being debt-free and sticking to it has really hurt people. But at the same flip side of it, people trying to dig themselves out of a hole and pay debt too aggressively or pay it in maybe inefficient ways can lead to a very quick cash flow issue. And if you don't have easy access to debt to get it back up, could be actually getting yourself into a nightmare situation, even though you're trying to dig yourself out of debt. So be careful. Still think that judging your advertising company by looking at your cost as a percentage of sales is a good measure? Well, I hope not after this episode. Look at the numbers, try and get the emotions out of it, and some of your more complicated business decisions and growth decisions become a little less daunting if you understand ROI correctly. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening to the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.